We're holding on Gimel Amr Aleph, the fourth line. We learned yesterday, we started discussing that there's two types of cheresh. We said one, which is the classic kind that we mentioned, that's talked about in most places in Shas, is the kind of she'enu medaber ve'enu shomea. He can't speak and he can't hear. He was born deaf or became deaf at a very young age. And that kind is possible for most mitzvahs. We call them mitzvahs amos batar because they don't have da'at.
And one of the things is that they didn't ever get in the understanding of how to speak, where someone, who they may have lost the ability to
speak later, right, they still know how to speak, right, that's called cheresh. That's the other kind of cheresh, where they can't speak, but they can hear. Cheresh, yeah. But we said yesterday, we explained the Mishnah, and then we quoted a braisa to this effect. A cheresh, the kind who can't speak either, is for sure potter from the mitzvah of Re'ir, because he's potter from all mitzvahs. He's potter from the mitzvah of Simcha on Yom Tov as well. The cheresh, amadaber ve'enu shemea, the one who is only deaf but is able to speak, is chayev and Re'ir, is chayev and Simcha, he's potter from Re'ir. So now comes the question, Maishnala inyan Re'iyah de Petiri, what's the difference why we're saying that when it comes to Re'iyah he is potter, or Maishnala inyan Simcha de Mechayvi, and why would it be as far as the mitzvah of Simcha that he'd be chayiv? The answer is, inyan Re'iyah gomer Re'iyah mehakel, because when it comes to Re'iyah, when it comes to this mitzvah of appearing in the Beis Mikdash and bringing the carbon, etc., then we learn by Exeter Shavah from the word Re'iyah from hakel. And here, we're going to get into now the much of the rest of this Amud is going to be dealing with some of the details of Hakel. A little bit of a discussion about it. Dichtiv, the Pasuk says, Hakel asam ha'anoshim ha'anoshim v'ataf, gather together the people, the men, the women, and the children. Uchtiv, and the previous Pasuk before that says, what should you do? What does Hakel consist of? Bevoko Yisrael le'roi. Actually, when does it take place? When all the Jewish people assemble, in order to be seen by Hashem. So we see that Hakel is associated with Re'iyah, with being seen and also seeing the Shechina and the Beit HaMikdash. So therefore, the idea would be anybody who is potter from Hakel would be potter from Re'iyah. Okay, well then, V'hasam and Nolan, well then, how do we know by Hakel itself that the person who is deaf, who is not able to hear even though he's able to speak, is potter from Hakel? The reason is, Dichtiv, Laman Yishma'u Laman Yilmadu. The Pasuk says, in order that they should hear and in order that they should learn. Ratanya, and we learn in a braisa, Laman Yishma'u means Prat L'Medabav Ein Yishma'a. The word Laman Yishma'u comes to exclude somebody who is not able to hear, even though he's able to speak, that he is Potter from Hakel. Laman Yilmadu is the other way around, Prat L'Shema'a Ein Medabav. And the word Laman Yilmadu teaches us vice versa. If you have somebody who's mute, he's able to hear the king laning, but he's not able to speak, so he's not able to teach others. He's also potter from Hakel. So what we're saying, therefore, is the same rules apply to Re'iyah and the Beis Mikdash, because the Torah is comparing them, right, by using this word, Bevoko Yisrael le'roi. So the Gemara is assuming now, the thing is like this, the Pasuk uses the word yilmadu, l'man yishmu, in order that they should hear, or l'man yilmadu, and in order that they should learn. Which, that sounds like it, so what are we saying? What did we just say? We said that somebody who is not able to speak is potter because of l'man yilmadu? Why not? The Gemara is going to ask. He's able to learn. He may not be able to teach others, but the Pasuk is not saying you have to be able to teach others. It's not l'man yilamdu, it's l'man yilmadu. Yilmadu that they themselves should learn. So that's the question. Are you telling me that somebody who is not able to speak is not able to learn? Not so. There were these two mute people who were in Rebbe's neighborhood. They were the sons of the daughter, so the grandchildren of Rebbe Yechonim ben Gudgoda. He was a Tana who lived at the time of the Churban Bayis Sheni. So his grandchildren now were living in Rebbe's time. And others say that they were the sons of the sister of Rabbi Yechanan. This, by the way, we know there was a sister of Rabbi Yechanan who married Rish Lakish. That was a long time later. Rapash, this was a different sister. Anyway, either way, you have these two boys, they were mute, but whenever Rebbe used to come into the Beis Medrash, they would also come in. Actually, it says on the side, they would sit in front of him, And before I say, they'd make a point of sitting right in front of him so that they'd be able to make sure to get every nuance of what he's saying. They would nod with their heads, they would move their lips, as if to show that they understand, right, to show that they're able to follow along, but they can't get the words out. Yeah. Boy, Rebbe Rachmi Alayu, Rebbe Davin for them, because he saw how much they wanted to learn. The Itzu, and they were healed. The Ishtakach, and when they were healed, when they were able to start speaking, they found out to have a Gemira Hilchasa, that they knew the Halachas, the Sifra, the Sifri, and the Sifra, which is the Medrash of Halachas on Vayikra, which goes through the Psukim of Vayikra and explains how we learn out the Dinim from the Psukim, and Sifri, which does the Sifri, which does the same kind of thing for Bamidbar and Dvarim. We call our shas and the whole and the whole shas, meaning the Gemara. So they knew a lot. I know because Lashon Rabim. Yeah, I know. Anyway, so they knew quite a bit then. All that from just hearing, even though they couldn't speak. Incidentally, Rav Shura Goyen in his letter, where Rav Nissim Goyen wrote him a very famous Rav Yaakov Goyen, the father of Rav Nissim Goyen, wrote Rav Shura a famous letter asking how did the Mishnah come to be written down? How Bechlal did how did the whole Torah Shabbat develop in the form that we have today? And why are the Machlokas in? And what's the whole history of the Tanoim and Amoraim and Goyim and whatnot? And Rav Shura wrote him a very famous letter in response. Part of it is, he points out, we usually think Rebbe wrote the Mishnah as if he wrote it from scratch, and after that, yeah, Rav wrote Sifra and Sifrei and so forth. But we see from this story that in Rebbe's times already these things existed, even though there existed a form of Gemara, because we're saying they knew the whole Gemara, because these things they existed. They weren't finalized in a certain text yet. What Rebbe did is he finalized the Mishnah, but there already existed, as we said yesterday, this Mishnah Rishonah, Mishnah Achronah, so there's stages in it. They did it Palpeh. Even afterwards, there's a whole another Machlokas, whether Rebbe actually wrote down Mishnayas or not. It's Rashi and Rambam take opposite sides of it.
That even the Rambam, who says that at the times of Rebbe, who wrote that the Mishnah was written down, doesn't say that Rebbe wrote down the Mishnah. Because Rebbe taught the Mishnah orally, Shinnai.
They all wrote it. So not Rebbe himself wrote it. Okay.
So
yeah. Okay. Let's not get. I don't want to get too far off topic,
But basically, Rav Shira Goyen says, this day, learning Gemara. How do you learn Gemara? Now, even somebody who learns Gemara about that by heart, takes a written text, studies it by heart, and learns it by heart. But they learned it orally from people who learned it orally all the way from Ravina and Ravashi. So we've learned orally all the day. And the Mishnah was also originally taught orally.
Which may explain partly, I guess, that's interesting, because that may explain partly why it is that we have so few really ancient Kitzvei Yad in Mishnah and Gemara. A lot of them also were burned or lost or what have you, but that could also be because by and large they learned Baal Peh. Anyway. So we see, anyway, getting back to, we see that a person cannot be able to speak and still be able to learn quite a bit. Mazutra, because Koribe Laman Yilamedu, because you can read, just like we said yesterday about Lirois and Lirois, the word Yilmedu, that in order that they should learn, can also be read as if it was Yilamedu, as if the Nekudas were Yilamedu, that they shall teach. So the implication is, in order for somebody to be Chayv and Hakel, they have to be capable of teaching. Yes, these two boys were capable of learning, even though they couldn't speak, but they couldn't teach until they were healed. So as long as somebody is mute, then he's potter from then he's potter.
In the absence of Nekudas, you have to give credit to both learning.
Right, well, that's why the Torah is written without Nekudas, partly in order that we should be able to douse in words in more than one way. Ravashi, Amavade Laman Yulamadu Hu. Ravashi says, for sure, you have to say, even if you didn't have the story of the two boys, necessarily you would have to say that when the Torah says, Laman Yulamadu, that actually it's meant to be understood also as if it said Laman Yulamadu. The Isakhaman Yumadu, because if you were to think that let's go back to our original assumption that a mute person would be chayev in Hakel because he's able to learn. But Bakimandalamishtoy Lagama, if we were to assume, in the absence of that story about the two boys, that somebody who's not able to speak can't learn, Well, the kibben de la shama le gomar. Well, then automatically, if he can't, then that means if he can't hear, for sure he can't learn. Hai laman yishmu nafka. Then we would be able to learn that already from the word laman yishmu. That because he can't hear, because there's no laman yishmu in order that he should be able to hear, therefore he's putter. Elavade laman yilamduhu. So necessarily, therefore, we have to say that the word that they are talking about two different things. Laman yishmu teaches us about somebody who can't hear. Laman yilmadu or yilamdu is meant to teach us about somebody who can't speak. That he is also potter from hakel.
You can take one from the other.
And not you can take one. That's the Torah has to say both things, because otherwise we wouldn't know. And if we have to say that the word, even though it's written, even though it's pronounced laman yilmadu, we have to understand that it means more than just laman yilmadu. It also means laman yilamdu, because otherwise laman yishmu effectively says the same thing as laman yilmadu. Only if you understand it. I mean, yilamdu, do those words gain an extra meaning? Anyway, the bottom line is, therefore, that's where we get when we said yesterday that a cheresh who's not able to hear, even though he's able to speak, is potter from re'iyah. This is where we get it from, because we're saying by analogy with hakel. Amar panchum, more on this. Cheresh ba'oznei achas potter min re'iyah. Somebody who is deaf in one ear is also potter from re'iyah. Shenema ba'oznehem, because the pasuk says that the king should read the Torah in their ears, which means that the person has to have two functioning ears. That's why b'hai ba'oznehem, b'hai ba'oznehem, b'chol Yisrael. Why, the word ba'oznehem means in the ears of all the Jewish people. How else would he say it? Tikkaret ha'Torah zeis neged kol Yisrael ba'oznehem. How else would he say it? The answer is ahumi neged kol Yisrael nafka. If you just needed that, if all you needed to say is that the king has to read it in the presence of the whole Jewish people, You have the word neged kol Yisrael automatically. Obviously, if he's reading it in front of the whole Jewish people, it means that they're hearing. But no, the Gemara says imi neged kol Yisrael. No, if we only have the word neged kol Yisrael, haba min afagav leshami, then you would think it might mean that it's good even if they don't hear. What do we mean they don't hear? Tosfos says because, for example, they're far away. It's a big crowd. You might physically be able to hear, but you're too far away, and you can't, and you're not able to hear. The question is, why? Maybe we would say that the word ba'oznehem is extra and therefore is available to teach us that everybody has to have two functioning ears because otherwise neged kol Yisrael. Why? If we only had neged kol Yisrael and not ba'oznehem, then you would think it's good enough to just be there even if you didn't listen, even if you don't actually hear. Kasa rahmana ba'oznehem, or dushami. That would be why the Torah has to say ba'oznehem, meaning that they actually have to hear. And the answer is ahum laman yishmu nafka. That part, that they actually have to not only be there, but they actually have to be able to hear, that we learn from the Torah continues, that the Torah continues, laman yishmu, in order that they should hear, the pasuk that we just quoted before, that a deaf person is potter. So we have, in other words, two different words in the pasuk that refer to hearing. One, laman yishmu, from which we learn, that a deaf person is potter. One, we have ba'oznehem, which teaches us that even a person who is deaf in one ear is also potter. And then we have neged kol Yisrael, which teaches us that all Jewish people have to be there.
One ear, because otherwise you wouldn't need the ba'oznehem.
Right. Well, that's what we're saying, because we can't just say that ba'oznehem means in order that they should hear, because laman yishmu teaches us that. Yeah. And therefore, again, since we're saying the same rules apply to Re'iyah as Hakel, then it follows that if he's potter from Hakel, then he's potter from Re'iyah. Another one, Amar Panchum, Chigu Beragla Achas Potter Min Re'iyah. Also, a person who's lame in one leg is Potter from Re'iyah. The Mishnah had said somebody who's lame in both legs, but here we're talking about one, Shnema Regolim, because the pasuk says that it has to be the Shalosh Regolim, which means Regolim in the plural.
Regolim is not Regolim.
No, but the pasuk uses the word Regolim, Shalosh Regolim, Tafik Libashana.
To mean what?
Well, it means Yom Tovim, but it also is Meloshin Regal. It means to go up on foot. So it has to be that the person has two functioning feet.
Foot means
No, but Regalim means times when you have to go up on your feet. You want to say v'horagolim v'horle prathabali kabin? Why? We use the word regolim. We're going to learn tomorrow that we use it for a different purpose. That it teaches us, that it also means that a person who has a wooden leg, a person who has an artificial leg, is potter, because it says regolim. So here we're talking. In other words, when we say over here a chigur beragle achas, we mean he has his original two legs. Just one of them doesn't work. But it's not, he hasn't been amputated or anything. Maybe we would say the word regolim means that he actually has to have both the feet that he was born with, both the feet that a regular person has, excluding if he's amputated and has a wooden leg, right? But maybe if he doesn't have a wooden leg, he actually has his own legs, even though one of them doesn't work. Maybe he is chayev. The answer is that a person does not have to be early or regular. If he has a wooden leg, that actually we learn from the word pa'amim. A few different places where the Torah talks about the Shalosh Regalim. One of the expressions it uses is Shalosh Regalim, topically Bashana, and another one is Shalosh Pa'amim Bashana. Now, we usually think to translate that Pa'amim means times, three times a year. But no, the Gemara is going to say over here the word Pa'amim actually also means foot, also means feet. Titania, Pa'amim, it ain't Pa'amim el raglayim. The word Pa'amim is another word for feet. And thus the pasuk says, "Tera masna regel." They'll be trampled on by the feet. Ragle oni, the feet of the poor people. Pame dalim, the pa'amim of the impoverished. So we see that pam is more or less a synonym for regel. The pasuk is repeating the same expression in different words. But Omer, and then we have another pasuk. Mayofo pa'amayich bana olim bas nadiv. We have you might argue, maybe not. Maybe the fact is that saying ragle versus pame, maybe they do mean two different things. No, you have a pasuk that says, in Shashurim, how beautiful are your pa'amim in shoes, the daughter of the nadir, the daughter of the volunteer. So we see there it clearly has to be talking about feet, about her own feet. What else do you put in shoes? So therefore we see that pa'amim is another word for feet. So then if we have two words, regolim and pa'amim, one of them teaches us that you're potter if you have a wooden leg, and the other one teaches us that you're potter if you don't have two functioning legs.
Pa'amim means double.
No, pa'amim means.
And that's how it includes feet.
No, what is the basic meaning of the word pa'am? No, not really.
Pa'amim means twice.
Pa'amim means twice. Yeah, but that's kind of a semantic development of the word. As far as I know, the basic underlying meaning of pam is something that bangs. Therefore, it comes to mean pa'amon, which is a bell, which has a clapper that bangs. Therefore, it's the feet which bang on the ground, and therefore it comes to mean time, like you know over and over, doing over and over the same thing, like you walk with your feet. But so what we're saying over here is the basic underlying meaning of pam is closer to foot than it is to time.
Right, and
repetitively. Yeah, but that's a semantic development. That's a semantic extension of it, yeah. Since we mentioned this pasuk, Dorash Rava Darshin, the pasuk, what does it mean, Bas Nadiv? We learned this in Sukkah as well. Mai Dichtiv Mayofo Pamayach Bana Olim Bas Nadiv. What does it mean? The pasuk says, how beautiful are your feet, your steps in shoes, the daughter of the Nadiv. It means Kamenoin Raglein Shal Yisrael B'Shal Shal Olim L'Regel. How beautiful are the footsteps of the Jewish people when they're Olim L'Regel? Why are we focusing on the fact that you have feet? Because Marsha says, and in particular, when you're walking with shoes, you're much more comfortable. You're going with Simcha. That's how they would go Olim L'Regel. They wouldn't just go barefoot, which would be uncomfortable.
I think we're going to see the same that you're not allowed to wear sandals.
You're not allowed to wear sandals in the Harabayas, that's true.
But just
the Harabayas. Just the Harabayas, yes. So you'd walk with shoes or sandals or what have you until the Harabayas, and then you take them off, yeah. And then the pasuk continues, Bas Nadiv, the daughter of the volunteer, means Bite Shalavrav Vinashanikur Nadiv.
What do you want to say, volunteer or maybe a
nobleman? Nadiv has more than one meaning, but let's see in a second. It means Bite Shal Avram Avinu Shenikra Nadiv, the daughter of Avram Avinu, who is called a Nadiv, Shenema Nadive Am Nesafu, the Nadive, which, okay, it can mean the nobles, it can mean the volunteers, whatever the peoples have gathered, Amaleke Avraham, the people of the God of Avraham. Why? Aleke Avraham, below Aleke Yitzchak Yaakov? Doesn't Hashem associate himself with Yitzchak and Yaakov as well? Why are we singling out Avraham? Aleke Avraham, Shaitzchilu Legerim. We mean we single out Avraham because he was the first of all the Gerim. So we say, in other words, therefore, that the whole Jewish people take their yichus from that. That he's the first one. He's the first one to volunteer to go and to go blaze that new path.
Matters on the
Mila
more than other people.
That's one idea. Rashi says Hashem should not really, that his heart uplifted him, his heart volunteered him to recognize the Eibishter. And the Gimayamim is also, the Gerim do the same kind of thing. The Gerim will volunteer from among the people the Kabbalah Aleim Ol Mitzvahs, that accept the yoke of Mitzvahs on them. Yeah, Tosfos says, well, we in a way don't, I mean, in a way we do, but we're born into it.
Mm-hmm.
A Ger who takes it on voluntarily is more Miyuchas Tavram, in a way. It's similar, I guess, but it's not exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
There's a mashal in a medrash someplace about a shepherd who has a bunch of sheep, and one day a deer comes into the pen and starts hanging around with the sheep, and the shepherd takes extra good care of it because, you know, the sheep, okay, what else do they know? You know, they're domesticated animals. This deer who could be running around in the woods and instead came and then wants my protection, he deserves extra credit for that. And so similar to the gear. No, but I mean, anyway, when we're talking about the Jewish people going on Aliyah the Regal, obviously we're talking about the born Jews as well as the Gerim. So all of us are Miyuchas Tavram Avinu. But specifically, the Nedive, the ones who voluntarily take it on when they weren't born into it, are the Gerim. Yeah, what you said about Mila is what Tosfos says, that in what way is he a Nadiv, the fact that he had the mitzvah of Mila more than anybody else. They just ennobled him with that mitzvah more than anybody else.
First one to do it. Everybody else did it. No,
because he's the first one. Well, in other words, Tosfos is taking Nadiv more in the sense that you said a nobleman, that the Eibishter ennobled him by giving him this mitzvah, which nobody else before him had been given. Amar of Kahana, Dorash of Nothan Baman Yumi Mishum of Tanchum, my dichtiv va boi reik in by mayim, we had this in Shabbos. I'm not real sure what Rashi says the reason why we're bringing it in over here is because the previous thing we said is something from a Tanachum.
Yeah.
So therefore we bring in something else from him. So now we have another thing that Rav Tanchum said. A Dorosh of Nothan Baman Yomi Mishum Rav Tanchum. My Dichtiv Aboi Reik Ein Bei Mayim. What does it mean by Yosef? It says the pit was empty, there was no water in it. Mimash Mashanem of Aboi Reik Ein Yadesh Ein Bei Mayim. If we were told the pit was empty, of course there's no water in it. Ela Mayim Ein Bei Amad Hashem Akrabim Yashba. It means there was no water in it, but there were snakes and scorpions in it. Which, you know, one famous explanation about that is, it doesn't mean obviously that the brothers knew there were snakes and scorpions. The whole point was, Reuven is telling them, throw him in there in order that he'll be able to save him later. If the snakes and scorpions in there, that's not going to do any good. But they're hiding out in the crevices or whatever, Reuven didn't realize. There is a verse that somebody says, I can't remember who, that the Eibishter would rather interfere with Derech HaTeva than with people's Bechira Chofshis. So when it comes to them throwing him into the pit, that the Eibishter doesn't hold him back. If they want to throw him in, let him throw him in.
Right.
But the Nechashim Va'akrabim, not the Eibishter can prevent from that. That the Eibishter will prevent from biting Yosef while he's in there.
Also, I heard from Rabbi.
And that's what he did. Yeah.
I heard from Rabbi Shlomo Marush that he said that one thing was that Reuven rather that Yosef would have to deal with the snakes and scorpions because he would figure that he couldn't.
There's another thing also that I saw that what do we say the brothers sold Joseph for 20 silver coins. Now, I mean, in those days the price of an average slave was 30 coins. In Parshas Mishpatim it says if an ox kills a slave, you got to pay the master 30 shekalim. Why are they selling him at a discount? One reason is because after being in a pit over there with snakes and scorpions, he looked so pale and weak that the Yishmaelim weren't willing to buy him at full price. They figured he's good for nothing. Anyway. Turn it up on him. Going back to Hakel and having a story to introduce it. It once happened that Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka and Rabbi Elazar ben Chisma, maybe take out the ben, like we have in Kofi Ovis, went to greet Rabbi Yeshua in Pekin. Now, Rav Yeshua was the Av Beis Din, but apparently at this time he wasn't with the Sanhedrin in Yavne or wherever they were at the time. He lived in the city of Pekin in the north of Eretz Israel.
It wasn't on Yom Tov or before Yom Tov?
Doesn't say. Who says it had to have been on Yom Tov B'chol? Yom Tov HaYashachayavar on the Chavad Esrab. Okay, so then they traveled up to Pekin before Yom Tov, and now on Yom Tov they went to Guyim. Amalehem, ma chidush hayu b'Beis Medrash hayom? What new things happen in the Beis Medrash today? Amalei, they said, how can we tell you anything new? Tamidecha anu memecha anu shaitin. Will your tamidim drink from your water? In other words, first of all, the double expression is, number one, how do we have the breitkeit to say anything to you, to volunteer to say anything to you? And number two, anything we say, you know already. Yeah, that's the Tamidecha. We don't have the right to speak in front of you, yeah.
Even though we've heard it from other people.
Yes. Yeah. Amalehem afapikein, after all, nevertheless, granted, but yepshalavis medrash plus chidush, it's impossible that in this medrash there was not some kind of chidush. So, let me start first. Shabbos shomi haisa. Whose Shabbos was it? We know the famous story in Brachas, after they deposed Rav Gamliel and put Rav Elazar ben Azariah as a nasi instead, and later on they brought back in Rav Gamliel. What are we going to do? We can't completely depose Rav Elazar ben Azariah, Malam Rakodesh Kol HaMiridin. So they arranged that they're going to switch back and forth. Rav Gamliel will have 3 Shabbosim of the month, and Rav Elazar ben Azariah is 1, or the different gears say 2 and 1, whatever. Whatever it was, so some weeks it would be Rav Gamliel, some weeks it would be Rav Elazar ben Azariah, would be the Rosh Hashanah. So whose Shabbos was it? I tell him, Shabbos Rav Elazar ben Azariah, it was Rav Elazar ben Azariah's turn. He asked him, well, Mal Haya Hagada Hayoim, okay, what Agadta did he talk about? Amr Elazar, Beparshas Hakel. He talked about Hakel. Umad Darashba, okay, he asked him, what did Yashin in it? Oh, the Pasuk says like this, Hakel Asa'am Ha'noshim Va'noshim Va'tas. Gather together the people, men, women, and children. You have to ask, Im Anoshim Boim Lulod, if the men are coming, it would be in order to learn. Noshim Boim L'Shmaya. Women come, they may not learn, especially there's opinions in the Gemara and Poskim or whatever that women are not really supposed to learn Torah. But they come at least in order to hear. Question is, Taflom Aboyim, but why are the children coming? And the answer is Kidei Litin Schala Mivyehen, in order to give reward to those, to the parents who bring them.
What would you think?
Ah, so that's some of the Farshim actually say, that's the point. Why does the Eved Shtubach have to say Taf? Obviously, if men and women are coming, who else are you leaving with the kids? Necessarily, you're going to have to bring them. But the Eved Shtubach explicitly puts them in the positive in order that you should have, in order you're not just doing it because I have to, because I don't have a babysitter, you're doing it, and you're doing it as a mitzvah, and getting a schar for it. Ah, so what about chinuch? The question is, what age kids are we talking about? There's a lot of discussion in Mefarshim about this, and there's an interesting sikha where the Rebbe analyzes this approach of Rav Elazar ben Azariah. The one way that some Mefarshim take it is, yeah, there's a difference between the older children have a mitzvah of chinuch, a regular mitzvah of chinuch to bring them. The younger children who are not old enough to understand them, you're just bringing kedei litin schar l'mivyehin in order to get schar. The Rebbe says, okay, but we don't really find any place that there's a difference in the chiyuv between children. I mean, pashtus, all children, until bar mitzvah, don't really have a chiyuv of their own. If we're saying that the parents have to bring them, there's not really a distinction made between the babies and the older children. The gist of it is, the Rebbe explains, the point is like this. One way we can look at Hakel is it's a mitzvah on the king. The king has to read the sefer, has to read the Torah in front of the people. Necessarily, Ein Melech B'Layam, if he's going to be reading the Torah, there has to be a people over there. So they come. In a way, like they're helping him to fulfill the mitzvah, but it's not an individual chiyuv on each person. Sort of like whatever analogizes it to what we talked about yesterday, Piri V'Rivya. A man is chayiv in Piri V'Rivya, a woman is not, but a man can't accomplish the mitzvah without a woman. So she's Meseyeya in it. So one way of looking at it is the people are Meseyeya, the king, to do the mitzvah. The other way of looking at it is, no, there is an individual chiyuv on each person, on top of the king's chiyuv to read. That's what Rav Elazar ben Azariah is saying of you. There is an individual chiyuv. Iman nashim boim, if the men are coming, it's not just in order to facilitate the king doing the mitzvah, it's that they themselves should be learning. The women are coming, it's in order that they themselves need to be here. So then therefore, so when we bring the taf, it's the older children, yeah, sure, you're accomplishing something that they're actually able to hear, and they're able to understand a little bit, and they get chinuch out of it. But the point is, you bring the taf, is each of them, there's an individual chiyuv to bring them, quite aside from the whole thing of right aside from the whole thing of chinuch, just because all the children have to be there.
Since I mentioned lulamid, didn't we just say earlier lulamid?
They come lulamid as well, but first lulamid, yeah, right? Lulamid and last lulamid. Besides, I mean, not all people who learn are capable of teaching. They, you know, before we were talking about whether physiologically they're capable of teaching, whether they're able to speak. But even, you know, you can have a person who's able to speak, but still, you know, they don't have the capability to teach, you know. And there's also a discussion among the Achronim, from what age are we talking about that the kids have to be brought? Are we talking about even newborns? Are we talking about maybe only from 30 days old? When the Rebbe came out with the campaign 30 or 40 years ago to bring all the kids for Aseret HaDibros on Shavuos, he talked about doing it from 1 month old, because the Minchas Chinuch holds in this case also there's no specific chiyuv to bring kids below a month old. Practically speaking, you probably will, again, because you don't have a babysitter if everybody's coming, but there's no specific chiyuv for that. The chiyuv is once they're not a natal anymore.
Once the baby is born, it's 1 day old. They like the bachelor with the girl bachelor.
Interesting.
I heard it somewhere. Yeah. I don't think it's
true,
but they
I would not doubt that.
Okay.
People are not that.
Yeah, there's also there's Minhagim. You hear of stories among the Polish Sadikim where they put yarmulke and tzitzis on babies from a very young age. Anyway, on the land. Amalahem, so Rabbi Yeshua says to them, Margolis Toiva Hoysa B'yadchem, you guys had a precious jewel in your hands, Ubikashtem La'abdim Imeni, and you would have made me lose it if you didn't want to say. I like this. Basically, I'm glad that I got it out of you. Why is he so impressed, right? Why is he so impressed by this thing? So one, there's an interesting thing from Moshe Feinstein, where he says, going back again to this thing about there's a path, some of them are actually there in order to learn and understand, and some of them are babies and they're not really grasping it anyway. Rabbi Yeshua is telling them, you see from this that even if the kid is not going to be capable of understanding anything, you still need to teach them, and that is how it should be. That's how Talmud Torah. That's how a father is supposed to teach his children. You stuff them up. You stuff them with as much Torah as possible, even though they may not be able to understand all of it. But you try to get into them everything you can, and whatever stays. Right. Then there's another interesting reason they say why I don't remember who says this. Why Rabbi Yeshua likes this teaching so much. Is because it went back to his own childhood. We know in Pirkei Avos, Rabbi Yechon Mazaka says, "I'm Ashrei Yelatoi." Why? Because I think it says in Avos Rav Nassan that his mother used to go around to all the Batei Medrash with him as a baby, and then put his stroller or crib or whatever in the Beis Medrash, so he'd absorb words of Torah even as a baby. And look what he grew up to be. So he's saying, you see, from what Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah said over here, listen to Chayal Mevi'ehim, you see that what my mother did all those years ago is right, and attack had its effect.
Did
Acher's
mother do the same thing?
No, we'll have later in the Sefta about Acher,
no.
But no, Fakir, she, no.
Who was his father that we talked about?
There is a story in a Medrash that his father decided before Acher was born that he's going to dedicate him to learning Torah because he saw the fire around the Chachamim. That's right. In the Medrash, actually, not in the Gemara, but whatever. I don't think we have anything, no. Maybe what you're thinking of, actually, there was a different story with Acher when his mother was pregnant with him, something along the lines of, I think she had a craving for food, and then they ended up having to give her some because otherwise she'd be in danger. Yeah. When we get to that Gemara, in particular, when we talk about how Rabbi Yochanan saved Acher from Gehenna, remind me to tell you then, there's a very interesting thing that Eva talks about in a letter.
What's that?
Tesvav, we'll get there right before Rosh Hashanah, Be'ez Hashem. And then they said, further, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah also darshan as follows. The pasuk says, that's in this week's parasha, as Hashem ha'amarta hayom, you have praised Hashem today. Rashi's over here says ha'amarta means shibachta. On the pasuk, actually, Rashi says that it means you made him unique in the world. Anyway, so Hashem ha'amircha hayom, and Hashem has praised you today. You have made me one unique thing in the world, something that you can tell. It says on the bottom over here, quotes in the Aruch from Rav Hai's Goin, that means something that you can tell there's nothing else like it in the world. You've demonstrated to the world that's what the Eved is. And I, in turn, will make you a unique thing in the world. Which started out, we know, I mean, it's written in the Torah, but where did it start out from? It started out with, as Yaakov saying it. It started out as Yisrael Sobel Fata, yeah. And I will make you a unique being in the world, which, as we know, the famous Gemara in Brachos, but that's what it says in the Eved. Then further, he opened up and darshan as follows. Rashi says that this is still talking about Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, darshan as follows. Marsha says maybe not necessarily. Maybe actually what it means is that Rabbi Yeshua, hearing this teaching of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah about Chatzib Achas Ba'olam, he responded to his Talmudim, now Rabbi Yechon ben Broka and Rabbi Elazar Chisma, with a teaching of his own sort of related to that. Pasuk says, and at the end of Kehelet, Divrei Chachamim Kador Voinos, the words of the Chachamim are like goads. A goad is a long pole with a metal tip that you use to nudge an animal to go the right way when it's plowing. Uchmasmeros Naturim, and like planted, and like planted meaning firmly knocked in nails. Bale Asupos, masters of gatherings. Nitzu Meraya Echad, they're given from one shepherd. What does this pasuk mean? Lama nimshal divrei Torah l'tarvan. Why are divrei Torah compared to a goad? Lo malach. I tell you, mador ben zeh mechaven as aparel l'slameha. Just like the goad makes the cow go the right way along the furrow, lahotzi chayim la'olam, which brings out life for the world. Because then, when the cow does the plowing properly, you plant and you get a nice harvest, and people get panos out of it and have and get food for to keep themselves alive. So also, words of Torah keep a person on who learns them on the right path to go from ways of death to ways of life. For chayor elmazeh and chayor elmazeh.
Well, there's no middle ground. Either a dark and weak or a dark and dark.
In a way, yes. They always say that life is like going up a mountain slope. If you're not going up, you're going down. Yeah.
That's really the other way around.
What do you mean? Well, that's what we're saying over here. But as far as Darche Misa and Darche Chaim, we can understand it in terms of Chassidus, actually. That, you know, what there's Kedusha and then there's Sitra Achra, right? There's no in-between. I mean, even Klipas Noga is still a Klipa. So if you're not involved with the Tzadik Kedusha, then you're of necessity involved with the Tzad Shek Neged, yeah. The Gemara says, well, if so, then if we're comparing it to a goad, ma dorben zeh metaltel, if you're going to say that in that case, well, a goad can be moved around, doesn't stay in one place. So maybe you would say then after the term metaltel. So maybe also the words of Torah can be moved around. You can adjust them as you see fit, modernize them, etc. Talmud Lamed Masmer, right? That's why the pasuk compares them to nails that are knocked into place and they stay where they are. The Torah is fixed. It has certain rules. And that's the way the rules go.
What do you say in Mishivim on the Drush? When you hear a Drush, do we start asking questions on it, or?
Hey, you could. I mean, Ein Meshivin Al Drush really means, I think, that we don't use the same rules of questioning on Drush that we do. For example, in Halacha, we usually say we can't learn two dinim from one pasuk. In Drush, you can learn many different drushes from the yeah. But then the question is the other way around. If so, then what about a nail is lacking? It doesn't grow. After divrei Torah chaserin v'lo yaserin, so maybe also divrei Torah are lacking and they don't grow. Which is a few different possibilities. What it means that the nail is lacking. One is Marsha says it means when you knock a nail into a wall, you have a hole there. You've knocked out. You've made the hole. The wall is now missing something that was there before. Maybe that's what Torah does. Or there's a different explanation also that the nail itself eventually rusts, and it eventually rusts in the hole or whatever. At any rate, I mean, a nail never grows bigger. So maybe you would think divrei Torah the same way. Maybe like there's no room for kedushim in Torah, and all done, you know, chas v'shalom, all it is harmful. No, tamalayim and naturi. That's why the pasuk speaks of it being planted. Man is part of a rabba, just like a planting keeps on growing and developing. After Vetera, Poron Vidov, and so also Divetera, even though we said there was like on the one hand there was like a nail, it's fixed in place. You can't go alter it, but you can be machadish on top of it. You can be machadish within it. Then the Pasuk continues, Balei Asufos, the masters of the gatherings, which means Eilat Tamar Chachamim, Shiyoshvan Asufos Asufos, Va'is Kim Torah. This refers to the Tamar Chachamim who sit in groups in different places and learn Torah. And actually not just in different places, Asufos, different groups as in different schools of thought. So Halola Mitamin Va'alola Mitarin, Halola Oisrin Va'alola Matirin, Halola Poisrin Va'alola Makshirin. One group says it's Tame, one says it's Torah, one says it's Asa, one says it's Mutter, one says it's Pasa, one says it's Kasher. It was in Tanya a few days ago where the Alter Rebbe talked about Beth Shama Beth Hillel, how Beth Hillel is their neshamas are from Tzad HaChesed, therefore they try to be master things as much as possible so that they're able to go up to Kedusha, as opposed to Beth Shama is from Tzad HaGevurah, and therefore they try to say as much as possible things are also and cannot go up to Kedusha. So you have all these different ways of looking at things. Well, historically, before Beth Shammah and Beth Hillel, there were very few machlokes, and we're going to learn later on in the next parak, in the middle of the next parak, that up until for the first thousand or some years after Matan Torah, there were no permanent machlokes. And anytime people had a machlokes, they'd go to the Beis Din Agadol, like the Torah says, and Karfas Shrosim, and resolve it. The first zugot, Yosef ben Yehuda, Yosef ben Yochanan, had their first machlokes, that Shmicha and Karbonos and Yamtiv. That one persisted throughout the generations of the zugot. Hill and Shammai themselves argued on three more dinim, and Beis Shammai and Beis Hill argue on almost 300. But that was later on. This is already, you're talking, by the time you reach Beth Shammah Basil, you're talking 1,300 to 1,400 years after Matan Torah. Had it not been for that, I mean, that was because of the historical circumstances. And actually, the Gemara says that when these machlokas started developing, it was not a good thing. The Gemara has some strong words to say about it. But in a way, the deeper way of it, lahagdol Torah l'adira, makes the Torah greater and greater. On the other hand, I guess the idea is, if it didn't have to be that way, it could have been, for example, that you still will have your Oisrin and Maturin, you still will have your Tzadah Chesed and your Tzadah Gvura people, but you'll get it resolved by the Beis Din HaGadol, and that'll be that. You'll have the Beis Din HaGadol will be the Mamutza Mechaber, the Tiferes that blends them and decides what's what. Anyway. So, Shema Yom Adam Heyachani Lamed Torah Me'atha. So, a person might say, "Well, how am I supposed to learn Torah if everybody has a different opinion?" Talmud Lomer. That's why the pasuk finishes off, "Kulam Nitnu Meraya Echad." All of these different opinions were given from one shepherd. Kelach Nasnan, one Hashem gave them. Paunas Echad Amran, one leader said them. The leader meaning Moshe Rabbeinu, because as Rashi says, you never find anybody trying to bring a proof from a Navi arguing with Moshe Rabbeinu. We know the Navim are come to explain and amplify what Moshe is saying. As we had a few times, for example, Yechezkel didn't make up dinim. He just he taught in Torah Shabbat what was already known from Torah Shabbat. Mipi Adon Kolamais in Baruch Hu, and he said in the name of the master of all works, may be blessed. Just did by Dabra Elohim Eskalad Varameila, as it says, Hashem spoke all these words, which means not just all the words of the Aseret HaDibros, all the words of all Torah for all generations. There is, by the way, Rishonim and Achronim have a field day with this whole concept that we're saying over here that the Eibishter gave all these different opinions, and you say, we learned in Eirubin, Eirubin, Dibra Elohim Chaim, how does that work exactly? What does that mean? The Eibishter said about the same thing, Tomei and Tahar, for example, isn't it one or the other? And ultimately, the Halacha decided a certain way. There's a lot of different explanations of it. Among them are that yes, the Eibishter made things that they're flexible. A thing can be either Tomei or Tahar within certain parameters, and left it up to the Chachamim to decide. Or there's an idea, I think, from Maharal that everything has in it an aspect of Tomei and an aspect of Tahar, for example, and therefore it depends on how the Chachamim looked at it. And there's many different ways of looking at this whole concept. It continues, Af Ata, so you also, when you come to learn Torah, Asei Oznecha Kafa Kesef, make your ears like a hopper. A hopper is like a funnel shaped thing that you pour the grain into it to go into the mill. So like you pour everything into it, and then it it's sort of like a funnel, but you pour in everything, and then it goes out little by little. So you make your ears like a funnel to absorb as much as possible, and then make sure after you've absorbed it that you work it through and figure out what, you know, what needs to be kept and remembered and whatnot. Yeah. Well, k'nei l'cha lev mevin, and acquire for yourself an understanding heart, l'shmoya as divim v'tamim as divim v'tarim, to understand and to hear the words of those who say that it's tamei, and the words of those who say it's tahor. You need to understand both positions, and then that way you'll come to realize what the halacha should be, and what the reasoning is behind it. As divim osin v'as divim matzir, as divim osin v'as divim matzir. So when they told him over this drasha, Beloshen Azeh Amalahem, so Rabbi Yeshua responded to them with the following expression: Ein Der Yosef Shabbalazman Azai Yeshari B'Saycha. There's never it's not an orphan generation as long as Rabbi Lazman Azai is in it. That he's able to come up with such teachings, it shows that the generation has a very good leader, basically. So what would Maharsha say? He would have to say that the angel Yosef is referring back to the previous teachings of Rabbi Lazar ben Azariah. The Gemara asks, "Lame relay the head." Yeah. Okay. Going back to the beginning of the story, when he asked them what happened to the Midrash, and they start begging off, "Were you Talmidim, Meimecha, or Shoisim?" Why don't they just say outright? I mean, granted, maybe they shouldn't. They're not supposed to be saying their own chedushim without being prompted. This isn't their own chedushim; it comes from Elazar ben Azariah. He's asking them for news from the Midrash. Okay, start telling the news. Because there was actually a story that happened in that also in that period where from which they learned that you have to be careful with derech eretz for your rebbe. Titania, my sibir of Yosef ben Dermaskis shahalach lahak ne Rabbi Lazar ben Lud. It happened that Rabbi Yosef ben Dermaskis went to greet Rabbi Lazar in Lud. Here, I don't know if necessarily it would mean on Yom Tov. Before with Rabbi Yeshua, it meant on Yom Tov, but we learned in Sukkah that actually Rabbi Lazar, in Rabbi Lazar, it says over here, it should be Rabbi Eliezer, but we learned in Sukkah that Rabbi Eliezer holds that really you shouldn't be leaving your home on Yom Tov. So then it couldn't have been on Yom Tov, it would have had to be on Chol HaMoed, maybe. Rabbi Eliezer asked him, what new came up in this Midrash today? Amalei, Nimnu v'gamru, they voted and they decided on the following halacha, Amun and Moav, Meister and Meister, Ani v'Shvias. Amun and the countries of Amun and Moav have to take off Meister Ani during Shemitah year. Some of these places, when we say Eretz Amun and Moav, we don't mean the parts that remained in the nations of Amun and Moav. Those obviously are not chayev in mitzvah sin, in mitzvah satlius baris. They were never part of Eretz Israel. We're talking about the parts that Amun and Moav taru b'sichen, the parts that Sichen conquered and then Reuven and Gad and the Chatzeshevet Menashe took over. Those parts are part of Eretz Israel. They were chayev in mitzvah, but when they came back to rebuild the second Beis Mikdash, they did not re-Makadish these places. That's just because there were too few Jews to, one reason is because there were too few Jews to settle the whole country. The other idea is because, as the Gemara is going to say soon, because you wanted to have available places where the dinim that are part of Eretz Yisrael, where the Aniyim will be able to go and get Shemitah food. So he tells them, they voted then that so Amun and Moav, these places, they're not keeping Shemitah nowadays because they're not chayav in it in the time of Bais Sheni and later. But nevertheless, the Chachamim were misakin now that they should take off Maizah. So what do you do? First and second year you do Maizah Sheni, third year Maizah Ani, fourth and fifth Maizah Sheni, sixth year Maizah Ani. They made a takana that in these places, in Amun and Moav, in Eber HaYarden, you do Maizah Ani 2 years in a row, the sixth year as well as the seventh.
Why did they do 2 years?
Well, because the alternative was they're going to do Maisa Sheni. And better to do Maisa Ani in order that their name has something.
But Shvi, so you're not giving any Maisa.
No, that's the point. Since in these places you're allowed to work the fields during Shemitah, because the Kedusha Rishona is lapsed after the Churban Bayis Rishon, and they don't have Kedusha Shniyah, you're allowed to work these places on Shemitah.
Yeah.
And instead, so you have to give some kind of Maisa. If you're going to, now, the Gemara discusses, the Mishnah discusses in Yodayim that in Bavel they made a takana, that in Shvius they give Maisa Sheni instead. But the difference is, Bavel is far away from Eretz Yisrael. The Aniyim anywhere are not going to be able to go there and get produce. Amun and Moav are right near Eretz Yisrael. They might as well be there.
When Shvius, you're saying that there was Shvius.
So it's the seventh year. It's in Eretz Yisrael of Shemitah. In these places, they don't keep the dinim of Shemitah as far as Shemitah's karka, but they give regular trumas and maaser. What kind of maaser do they give? Maaser on. So Rabbi Yossi tells him that they actually voted on it. This is a new halacha that they came up with. Rabbi Eliezer was upset with that. Amalai said to him, Yossi, pshoit yadecha v'kabel einecha. Stick out your hand and darken your eyes. Which one explanation of it means, in other words, like he's telling him, put your hands on your eyes and you are going to become blind because you said something inappropriate. Or I think Marsha actually says that v'kabel einecha literally means that he's telling him your eyes are going to fall out, your eyeballs are going to fall out onto your hands. Either way, it means you're going to be blind. Why? One idea is that, as we're going to go on to say, Rabbi Lozzi was upset that Rabbi Yossi is saying as if it's a whole new takana, when really it goes back much long before that. It goes all the way back to the Anshe Knesset HaGdolah. Or a different explanation is, and that's why we're bringing it in over here, because he just answered. He didn't say. You know, I'm your Talmud. I shouldn't really be telling you. So Rabbi Lozzi is false. That it felt that it's a lack of derech eretz. So he stuck out his hands and his eyes were and he became blind. Rabbi Lazar started crying. The secret of Hashem is for those who fear him and he tells them his brit. Which means there's a few different explanations what he meant by quoting that over here. One of them is he's upset over the fact that he had to punish Rabbi Yossi like that, because after Rabbi Yossi is Yireyav, he fears Hashem. And another explanation is that he's going to say that really they thought they were coming up with a new halacha of their own. Really, it was actually an old halacha that had been forgotten. The Eveshter arranged it that they had the Baruch HaKadosh, that they were mechaven to the original halacha.
So, thank you. He was punished just because of the words of Rabbi
Yossi. No, Rabbi Lazar, yeah. Yeah.
That's what
he heard. Yeah, but now Rabbi Lazar is upset over the fact that he had to do that. Amalai, he tells him, Lechem or Lahem, go tell them, Al tachushu l'minyanchem. Don't worry about what you voted. I know you voted on this, and that means inevitably there were some who voted one and some the other, and you never know for sure, is that really, maybe we did the wrong thing. Don't worry about it. I have a Kabbalah from Rabbi Yechem and Zakkai. Sheshama Mirabe, Mirabe, Mirabe. He heard from his Rebbe, and his Rebbe heard from his Rebbe. It goes all the way back. Halacha L'Moshe Mitzinai. That Amun and Moav Maaser and Maaser Oni B'Shvi. It's the same halacha that they thought they came up with new. That Amun and Moav give Maaser Oni in Shvi. Yes. What do we mean by Halacha L'Moshe Mitzinai? By the way, on the face of it, it was started at the time of the second Beis Mikdash. So there are some Mepharshim who say that, yes, we don't mean literally Halacha L'Moshe Mitzinai. We just mean it's as strongly established as if it was Halacha L'Moshe Mitzinai. And there are other Mepharshim who say, no, it actually literally means that it's Halacha L'Moshe Mitzinai, that the original Halacha L'Moshe Mitzinai is if there's a situation where there's going to be a Kedusha Shnia, then this is how you should do. Matam. There are many cities in Eretz Yisrael that the people who came out of Mitzrayim conquered, with Yeshua. But the people who came back from Babel did not conquer them. And it wasn't just because, the original Kedusha was Mekadesh Eretz Yisrael only for its time, not for all time. We talked about this a couple of months ago, because the original Kedusha was based on Kibush, on conquering Eretz Yisrael. So once it was conquered from them by Nebuchadnezzar, then that's it, the Kedusha of it is gone. Why didn't they reconquer or resettle these cities in the second Beis Mikdash? V'hinichum, they left them alone, k'desh yismuch alei aniyim b'shvi'is, in order that the aniyim should be able to rely on them in Shvi'ita. This way, if they're giving ma'aser ani, the poor people are able to go to these places and collect ma'aser ani, and they have what to live off of. Tana, we learn in a b'raisa, la'achash in esiyash v'daitai, after Rabbi Lazar calmed down, Amar yihiratzen shiyachzru eina yoytzi l'mekoyman, yihiratzen yoytzi's eyes should return to the way they were, either they should go back into their sockets, or they should not be blinded, whatever, v'chazru, and they return.
But Rabbi Yossi didn't pray for him. He didn't ask for it, and he didn't pray for it.
I guess
he
yeah, you realize he had to pray for his Rebbe, I guess. The Rebbe, by the way, once talked about the deeper idea of this, that the Aniyim were saying are relying on Amun and Moav. There's a sicha someplace in the Kutta Sichas that the Rebbe discusses. Bechlal, we talk about Reuben and God and God originally asked to settle on Eber HaYarden, and you know we usually talk about it wasn't necessarily the best thing of them to do. But really, the Rebbe explains on a deeper level, it was. We know that in Mashiach's times, we're going to have Keni, the lands of Ammon and Moab and Edom. They wanted to start on that process. There's already a part of those lands that are available, Ammon and Moab, Tarab, Tichon. Let's go jump at the opportunity and get it. Those places, now in Chassidus it explains that Keni, Knizi, and Kamuni represent the Moichin. That's why we don't have them nowadays. We were only able to refine the Midos. That's why we have the Shiva Amomin, which represent the Zayin Tachtonis, the 7 meters. We don't have the Keni, Knizi, and Kamuni because they represent Moichin. We'll only have the Shlemus of Ali, Moshe Mashiach. Reuben and Gad and Chassi Menashe are already working on being Mavaro those. The aniim, meaning ein oni elavadas, what is the real meaning of an oni, is somebody who does not have proper das, are soimach on them. They rely on what Reuven and God accomplished by making those places part of Eretz Yisrael.